Today's program is brought to you by Brooklyn Slate Company, a manufacturer of slate cheese boards, coasters, and other fine items. For more information, visit brooklynslate.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Chefs Allowed Show. I'm Megan O'Connor. I am in Chicago cooking up some fabulous cornbread in my kitchen. And as always on Monday night, I am joined to cook with my sister, Tricia Keel. Say hello, Tricia.
Hi, and welcome to the show, everyone.
Yeah, so this is a pretty fun show for us because, well, I know for me because Thanksgiving is like my favorite cooking time of the entire year. And I, Megan, really love to entertain at Thanksgiving. And in fact, as Tricia can tell you, I tend to have, up to 25 family members at my house from Wednesday till Saturday morning. So it's a cooking extravaganza in Chicago.
And let me tell you, the reason, because of what Megan does and her making it so elaborate on Thanksgiving and she's so into it, I have never really had to embrace Thanksgiving on a cooking level because I get to show up and bring the rolls. So I have to admit, I've only made Thanksgiving at my house one time in my whole entire life.
Really?
And it went all right. But I'm more of the just bring a side dish kind of girl when it comes to Thanksgiving. And it's funny because I've discovered I don't even like to read, like, you know, I like food literature, right? I mean, I'm constantly looking at cookbooks, but I don't really enjoy perusing over Thanksgiving ideas because I just don't really need them.
Oh, gosh. Well, are you cooking this year? So I'm having my husband John's family this year for Thanksgiving. So the Tricia and the Janice clan are on their own. So are you cooking, Tricia, or are you going to Lauren's?
Well, it's funny because I made some effort to call around to see, and I was going to offer up my house, but I was too, you know, being the youngest of this family, I was too late. Somebody's already doing it, and just show up and bring the rolls. So that's what I'm doing, although I'm hoping to bring a stellar side dish because I am practicing a side dish today on today's show, just to see if I could bring something a little bit different. I think that's probably it, too, the Thanksgiving tradition that I go to. Like, it's either here with a family, and we all bring the exact same things, so I don't have to read up on new stuff. Or I come to your house, where you're always doing something new, but you're kind of leading it, and I make sure my kids don't start a fire in your house. So, you know, it's...
I really like to experiment with Thanksgiving. And I have a couple of mainstay dishes that I can't stop making, like we've talked about before, that Brussels sprout cauliflower gratin, which is just, yes. I want to stick my face right in the casserole dish when it comes out of the oven. And mashed potatoes, of course, are just a have to. But I want to experiment a little bit with another green vegetable this year. And also, I've never been happy with my sweet potatoes. I've tried so many different ways, and I've never been happy. So my poor family is going to be eating sweet potatoes.
The other parts of your tradition are your two turkeys.
Yes, two turkeys. So actually, the show today is about preparing for Thanksgiving. And so Tricia and I each are making a side dish, something new to try on the show today. But more importantly, as we all know, the hero of the Thanksgiving table is the turkey. And we have on the show today the master, the hero of turkeys across this country, and maybe further than that. We have the turkey hero, Frank Reese, from Good Shepherd Turkey Farm, and he is going to talk to us about heritage turkeys. And I'm a little embarrassed that after all the Thanksgivings and all the two turkey dinners I've made over the last 10 years or whatever it's been, I really didn't understand or even recognize the fact that heritage turkeys were completely different than pretty much anything you could get at your grocery store or even, you know, at your meat market.
Well, the only reason I knew about it is because I read the book Animal Vegetable Miracle, and she does a whole segment on turkeys. And that was the first I was exposed to really how I'm going to use the word desperate, but that's just a bad word for it. But how commercialized it really has become, and the fact that we breeded out mating instincts out of turkeys, I thought was absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and you know, I always kind of, when I went to look for my turkey, I always felt good. Okay, I'm going to get a fresh turkey versus a frozen turkey. I'm going to get an organic turkey versus not. But you know, if you're really true to the turkey, that's not even halfway there. So anyway, I can't wait to talk to Frank because he has been breeding turkeys for a long, long time, and he really is kind of the master. Folks, if you want to read about heritage turkeys and Frank Reese, get online. You'll be amazed at the things he's done and what he's meant to keeping the heritage turkey alive, really. So
right.
We're not going to make turkeys today.
Because the show's only an hour.
To do that. But we're going to be making our side dishes while we chat with Frank. And I got to tell you, it's not going to be easy for me to get one of Frank's turkeys in Chicago, but I'm getting one. I got
I
the connection to Heritage Radio. I'm getting one. Because
I think, too, that you shouldn't put it at the kids' table. I think you should reserve the heritage turkey for the adults that come to your table.
Well, just so you know, it's not called the kids' table. It's called the cousins' table because some of the older cousins get mad that they have to sit at the kids' table.
Yeah.
So I've changed the name of it. It's just a little marketing, a little branding change there for the table. So that the cousins realize that it's not, you know, that is the table for them. They are not supposed to sit at the aunt, uncle, and grandparents' table. Would they want to sit at the aunt, uncle, and grandparents' table? No! They're sitting at the cousins' table.
Well, hopefully they don't listen to the show so that the older cousins don't realize that they're not getting the heritage turkey. They're getting the butterball.
Well, the other thing I want to ask Frank about, though, so I do make two turkeys every year. And one turkey, John makes two turkeys every year. One of them goes in our smoker in the backyard, and then the other one goes in the deep fryer. And I'm thinking to myself, do I really want to throw this amazing bird into a deep fryer? But maybe I do. I don't know. Well, I know. I'm going to ask Frank which one I should, if I'm only going to be able to afford one heritage turkey because of the shipping and everything, it's kind of pricey. But if I can only afford one heritage turkey, should I put it in the smoker or should I put it in the deep fryer? And should I brine it or not brine it? I have a lot of questions for Frank, besides the fact that I want to learn more about what he's doing for the bird.
Great. I'm glad. I'm going to let you ask a lot of the questions because I'm just going over to Mike and Lauren. So I don't need advice on turkeys.
With your green salad.
With my green salad. Actually,
so here's
today I'm making...
I have to tell you a funny story about the green salad. The green salad. So Lauren called me, or maybe Kristen, I don't remember which, called me and said, well, we'll bring the green salad. And I'm a little bit snooty about my Thanksgiving dinner. Like, I like everything to go together. And while it's really great for you to bring something, bring the rolls or the soda or some wine. But, you know, I like to manage the food stuff myself.
Right.
So she says, I'll bring the green salad. And I said, well, I've already got a salad planned. I'm doing this thing with these, you know, roasted grapes and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, no, the green salad. And I said, well, it's going to be on, like, some lettuce, some greens. And she goes, no, the green salad. It's Jell-O and cream cheese. And what makes it green? I don't even know what makes it green.
It's lime Jell-O.
And it's a little bit crunchy. And, you know, anyone listening, you've probably been exposed to the green salad before. I didn't know it was called that. But I came to find out that two of my brothers-in-law were very disappointed with my Thanksgiving dinners in the past because I did not serve the traditional green salad that their mothers made.
Which is absolutely hilarious because, one, we didn't know their mothers when we grew up. And, two, if you would see these spreads that Megan did, I almost called her Aunt Megan, that Megan put together, like, it is funny because it's that little glass dish that doesn't match your china.
Right.
With,
that has,
with
you know,
a
and
jello
in fact,
salad.
I learned, yeah, what I learned was, too, that this green salad was an advertisement for Pyrex or something. So you have to make the green salad in the Pyrex pan, and that's part
right.
of the tradition, too.
Right. So, yeah, we have
anyway,
a little bit.
The O'Connors are not getting a green salad.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't know what it is. Just leave it that way. That's smart.
All right, so what are you making today? And then we'll get Frank on the line.
So since this is Brussels sprout, our ingredient of the month is Brussels sprouts. I've already made a creamed braised Brussels sprouts on Good Day Columbus the other day, which was really decadent and wonderful and may be my side dish that I want to take over to Mike and Lauren's. But today I'm making a Brussels sprout, sweet potato, and apple hash. And it has bacon in it, too. Maybe I should put that in the title, too, that it's bacon, too. But, yeah, so a bacon, Brussels sprout, sweet potato, apple hash. Boy, that's a long name. But I'm going to try this out today. It does sound delicious, and it's going to be delicious. I just took the Brussels sprouts off the stock, and I've got my bacon crisping up right now with some onions. And I kind of like that I'm doing this on the stove because normally I do Brussels sprouts in the oven. That's just what I do. And these last two recipes, I've been doing them on the stove top. So we'll see how it goes.
Well,
I should be done by the end of the show.
Yeah, well, that's similar to what I made at the Eat Retreat that morning, and I added some kale to it, so you might want to think about that, too. It was really good.
I will think about it, but I don't have any right now, so I'll have to think about that later.
Sorry. Think about it for Lauren and Mike's if you don't do the decadent Brussels sprout okay. creamy thing you did before. All right, and I'm making something called cornbread with caramelized apples and onions.
Yum.
And I'm not sure this is going to make it to Thanksgiving because it might be too hard to make enough for 20 people, but it might show up on Wednesday night on the, you know, because everybody comes Wednesday night and I make a big meal on Wednesday night too. So I might do something like a pork shoulder or something or a brisket and maybe do the cornbread that night. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
There you have it. Actually, it doesn't seem like, it seems like outside of your wheelhouse, that dish. So I'm anxious to see how it turns out and where it shows up.
Because it uses the word bread.
Maybe, yeah, I don't see, you know, make the bread component. That's something you always just have someone bring. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I want to know how it turns out. It sounds good. Well, cool.
All
well,
right.
I'm going to keep
stopping
away.
Yeah, okay, let's take a break, and we'll get Frank Reese, the hero, the turkey hero, on the line here in just a minute or two. He is from Good Shepherd Turkey Ranch, and he is going to school us on what he's doing to... for the Heritage Turkey. So, folks, hang on just a minute or two. We'll be right back with No Chefs Allowed.
Welcome to this episode of Operations Education. I'm LaManda Joy, founder of the Peterson Garden Project in Chicago, Illinois. This segment can be heard every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on No Chefs Allowed on Heritage Radio. This week's lesson, kale. Kale is one of the most versatile greens to grow, as it can be used in everything from stews to salads and chips and even smoothies. Kale is a member of the brassica family and can have different flavors depending on what time of year it is harvested. The leaves are mild in spring and early summer and begin to develop a more bitter flavor as the weather warms up. Kale is at its sweetest and most delicious in the spring and just after a frost. There are many different varieties of kale, such as dinosaur, Tuscan, lacinato, which each have a distinct shape. Curly kale, which has large, broad leaves and curled edges, or red Russian, which is a sage colored with reddish-purple stems. How do you know when it's ready to harvest? Kale can be harvested young if you prefer tender leaves used in salads, or you can wait until the leaves reach their full size, which can range depending on the variety. To harvest, just snip the large outer leaves about a quarter inch from the stem. The plant will keep producing leaves, and you can harvest all season long. You can also plant more seeds in succession a few weeks apart for a longer and more abundant harvest. How do you store it? Wash and wrap in a damp paper towel. Stored in a loose bag in the refrigerator. Kale will keep about 1 week stored this way. You can also freeze kale for later use. To freeze, wash and remove the stems, blanch in boiling water for 2 minutes, drain and rinse immediately with cold water to stop the cooking process. Store it in freezer bags. To thaw, simply steam gently, toss into hot soups or stews, or let it thaw in the refrigerator. How do you cook it? Remove any yellowed leaves as well as any tough stems. Smaller stems from young leaves can be left intact as they are softer and not as fibrous. To remove the stems, fold the leaf in half and run a knife down the stem side to remove. Young tender leaves can be thrown into salads, raw, or try tossing some raw kale into your next smoothie to add a healthy antioxidant boost. Unlike other greens, kale retains much of its volume when cooked. 1 pound of raw kale yields roughly 2 cups cooked. Kale can be steamed, sautéed, baked, or added to soups, especially paired with white beans, lentils, or potatoes. Try simply sautéing it in a little bit of olive oil with some garlic and a splash of lemon juice. Add a little salt and pepper to taste and toss into your favorite pasta with some Parmesan cheese on top. You can also make kale chips by tossing the leaves with oil and salt and drying them out in the oven at the lowest setting, no higher than 250 degrees, until they're crispy. The possibilities with kale are endless. If you're making a kale salad with mature leaves, one trick to make it easier to chew is to massage it so the fibers in the leaves break down a bit and become more pliable and, well, relaxed. For more information and recipes for kale, you can go to wecangrowit.org or petersongarden.org. This is Lamanda Joy with Operation Vegetation. Happy growing!
Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor, cooking in my kitchen in Chicago, and Monday nights is my night to cook with my sister Trisha, so she's also on the show today, cooking in her kitchen in Columbus, Ohio. Say hello, Trisha.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got a great show planned.
That's right. We've got a great show because this is the beginning of Thanksgiving trial and error season at my house, and we have with us today Frank Reese, from Good Shepherd Turkey Ranch. He raises, not only raises, breeds, he everything for the heritage turkey. So we've got him on the line with us. Frank, are you there?
I am here.
Hello. Thanks for doing this today. I'm sure it's a busy season for you.
This is the busy time of year for us.
I guess. So, Frank, you know, I have to say I Googled you. And looked around the web and read a lot about you and was obviously inspired. But can you tell our listeners about your love of turkeys? When did it start, and how did you make the commitment to be the heritage turkey ambassador that you are today?
Okay. The calling these turkeys heritage to start out with is very new. That they've been called standard bred turkeys since 1874. I am a fourth generation farmer here in Kansas, so I was born into it, and I was one of the younger kids, and so I got sent to the poultry house, and it just so happened I enjoyed it. I loved taking care of the chickens and the turkeys and everything. So then I continued to did that as I grew up, and then I got involved in 4-H and started showing turkeys and competing in poultry shows and showing chickens and stuff. So I've been doing this for well over 60 years, and as a result, I got to know many of the, what I consider the great poultry people from the past, you know, as a kid, when these turkeys and these chickens were the birds that fed America. And so I've been doing it for a long, long time.
Wow. So tell us about, can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, you know, we've read a little bit about it, but tell us about how these birds that fed America suddenly were, or maybe not so suddenly, but were replaced by something different. And, we all seem to have just moved along with it. But can you just tell us a little bit about how and why that happened? Maybe even, you know,
well,
when it happened?
Yeah, as farms became industrialized, and all of our poultry today, chickens and turkeys and everything, are now raised by huge mega corporations. And turkey production and chicken production has become nothing more than just a factory farm system of making sure all the widgets are the same.
Uh-huh.
And that push started in about 1970. So this is really fairly new, at least in my eyes, at my age. The old standard bred turkey, or the heritage turkey, they call it today, fed America from about 1850 to about 1960. And then they started radically changing chickens before they did turkeys. But mm-hmm. then as farming went from the individual family farm to universities and to scientists and land-grant universities, and as they began to hybridize and to mutate, to genetically engineer these animals, everything radically changed, and so that even the last 20 years, they have radically changed these animals where they can now get a 20-pound turkey in 12 weeks.
And that sounds crazy. I'm just saying.
Well, and a lot of people
Well, because how long does it take for one of your turkeys? I mean, 12 weeks versus...
Months.
I'm sorry?
6 or 7 months it takes for... And my turkeys will quit growing.
Uh-huh.
The modern industrial turkey will not stop growing.
Because,
you know,
so you
a lot of people
have to
think
it's
the
eventually.
Hormones or the antibiotics and stuff they feed them. It's nothing to do with that. These animals
wow.
have been hybridized and mutated internally to do this. I could bring those turkeys here to my farm, raise them as I raise my turkeys, and they would still grow at that rate.
Oh, my huh. God. So... genetically,
and so, and not only did they change their growth rate, their metabolic rate is about 300 times faster than mine, but they also changed them skeletally. The skeletal structure is totally different. That there's a reason why when you go to the grocery store and you buy that turkey, it has this huge breast and these
yeah.
short little fat legs. Because they have so radically changed the skeletal structure of that animal.
So what will my turkey from your ranch look like? What will I see that looks different?
It'll have a much longer breastbone.
Uh-huh.
It'll have a much longer legs. Because that was one of the things they started doing in the late 60s and the early 70s. They found is they started selecting turkeys that had very short breastbones that the muscle would expand outward instead of long.
Instead of lengthwise, yeah.
Yeah. It's like taking a rubber band and stretching it. It becomes thinner and thinner the more you stretch it. Well, if you quit stretching, the rubber band becomes wider. And so that's as they began to select for these shorter shorter keel bones or breast bones, then the muscle expanded outwards into it. It became bigger and bigger. But, you know, they did a lot of other, you know, it's not one thing. It was multiple things, you know. Also, as they began to select for shorter legged animals, the muscle meat had to go somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Also, the wider the meat, you know, and everybody thinks they want white meat. The wider the meat, then the poorer the quality, because that's a direct relation to that animal's inability to oxygenate its muscle.
I'm a dark meat gal, but go ahead, explain that.
Yeah, and you will be quite surprised when you get one of our turkeys that the dark meat on our turkeys is going to be at least 3 or 4 times darker than the turkeys you buy from the grocery store, because
okay.
our turkeys are still capable of running, jumping, and flying.
Mm-hmm.
They can still act like turkeys. They can still naturally mate. They will live if you don't kill them.
Yeah.
They will live a normal lifespan. All factory industrial turkeys of today are dead-end animals.
Mm.
If you don't kill them, they will die.
So what is it? What is the lifespan of a turkey, one of your turkeys or a wild turkey?
A hen, 10 to 12 years.
Wow, and we're processing
like
in the,
wild
what
turkey.
Did you say, 6 weeks?
No, I'm sorry, what?
I was saying that conventionally we're processing them so fast, but they could live 10 to 12 years. That's the juxtaposition.
Yeah, my turkeys would live a long, full life if you didn't kill them because they haven't been altered. They haven't been hibernized.
I
just said my turkeys can still naturally mate. They will still set and hatch their own baby.
Okay. And I was going to ask you about that. So part of what you do is not only obviously giving these turkeys a wonderful place to roam and to live and to be healthy, but you do the breeding of the turkeys too, right? I read somewhere that you are just one of those people in the world that can look at a turkey and know enough about it and know what to do with it. Is that true?
Yes, I hatch all my own. All my turkeys, I don't buy turkeys from anybody because I don't know where I'd get the quality that I need because there isn't anybody out there that raises them. And some of the breeds and varieties I have here, this is really the last of them.
Oh.
And so and that was the main mission of me doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to save these old lines, you know, because like the line of bronze turkeys I have here have been here in Kansas since 1917. And so it's important to me that they be saved into the future, you know, because I think, you know, they've been raised here out on pasture, free ranging, naturally mating, without antibiotic use. They're healthy immune systems. And I think someday in the future, somebody's going to care.
Yeah.
You know, as we go down this very, very narrow genetic path of one type of chicken and one type of turkey. Someday the scientists are going to say, you know, we should have kept those healthy old birds. You know,
well, yeah, I mean, and that's what's happened with a lot of the vegetables, too. I had a little meltdown about the tomato last week on the show.
Oh, yeah, no. The chickens and turkeys are far worse. And what the other sad part is, you know, for your people that are listening, you know, what has happened is the industry has saw what has happened with heritage turkeys, and they think, okay, we want to cash in on this. So what they've done is they have taken their industrial factory turkey and put dark feathers on it. And so now a lot of people are buying these turkeys from people who are saying they're heritage, and they're not. All they've done is mutated and put dark feathers on them.
So how many different types of turkeys do you have on your farm?
I have 6 lines of turkeys that I'm working to save, that I know their lineage back.
But so within the 6 lines, like if I were to come to your farm, how many turkeys would I see roaming around?
Right now there's about 6,000 here.
Wow. Could you elaborate on that and kind of paint us a picture of what it's like
now,
on your farm?
Tomorrow, there will only be 1,000.
Tomorrow? Today's the day?
On Tuesday, there will only be 1,000 here.
Trisha, I feel like we today's
okay.
Today.
So when you, what do you call it? Do you harvest them? Do you slaughter them?
Yeah,
what do you call that? You do
harvest.
That? Do you really do it once a year?
We only process turkeys once a year. Because we sell them fresh, not frozen at Thanksgiving.
And that's it. That's so awesome. Now, I saw an article, I was reading up on you, and I saw an article that you might use someplace in Ohio to do this. Is that still true?
Yes, we have our turkeys are on their way today to Harrison, Ohio.
Can I drive there? So I'm located. This is a selfish question for me.
You
I live
help
in
to drive
Columbus,
over
Ohio.
There. It's
what?
Whitewater Processing Plant. Kevin and Kelly Copps there in Harrison, wonderful people. They've been very, very good to us. I mean, to find somebody willing to step up and to process these turkeys was very, very difficult. I could not do this without them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there's a number of people that if it wasn't for them, this would not be happening.
Frank, what's happening right now is that Trisha's about to jump out of her skin because she wants to get in the car and go there and buy a turkey. Can she?
Well, tell her to go and ask for Kevin or Kelly.
I'm going
to. You can get me one, too.
I'm coming to visit you for the Food Film Festival. Okay, we'll have to talk offline. But we're going to have to... Frank, you've just made my day, but we're going to have to take a break here in a second, and when we come back, Frank, let's talk about how people can get one of your birds and how you process all that and get them out to people that don't live in Kansas or Ohio. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute with more No Chefs Allowed.
Brooklyn Slate Company is a collaborative effort from Brooklyn graphic designer Sean Tice and Parsons graduate student Christy Hedeka. After visiting Christy's family slate quarry in upstate New York in the spring of 2009, the two grabbed a few pieces for use as all-purpose boards back home in Brooklyn. They found a number of purposes for the slate and began gifting pieces to friends. The response was so overwhelmingly positive that the two struck out to produce a line of slate products. They now make regular trips to the family quarry in upstate New York to hand-pick their favorite pieces of black and red slate. Some of the slate is sourced from the quarry graveyard, a collection of odd-shaped pieces that were ultimately destined to be ground for use as road cover or baseball diamonds. They then transport the pieces to their studio in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they do additional cutting and clean the stone to be food slate. Every single piece of packaging that comes with their products, from the envelope to the burlap bag, can be repurposed for other uses. The end result is a product completely unique in cut, shape, color, and overall presentation. For more information and to order, visit brooklynslate.com. Now through December, enjoy 10% off your purchase at brooklynslate.com with discount code HERITAGE.
Welcome back to No Chefs Allowed. We're talking with Frank, farmer at Good Shepherd Turkey Ranch. And he is schooling us on heritage turkeys and what we should do with them. And so I want to take a minute, Frank, and ask about cooking a heritage bird. I mean, you talked about how their meat will be a little bit different. I don't know if you heard earlier, but Megan makes two turkeys on Thanksgiving, normally one smoked in the smoker and one deep fried. Do you have any preference on how she should treat your bird?
Do you have? Well, part of it, you can do whatever you want with our turkeys. One of the things you've got to remember when you buy one of our turkeys is we do not inject them with anything. They are not pre-basted. They're not full of any chemicals. You get pure turkey. Mm-hmm. The other thing is you've got an animal that has run, jump, and fly. So it is like, you know, if you buy a turkey at a grocery store, an 8-pound turkey or 10-pound turkey, you're buying a tiny baby bird. That bird was probably killed when it was 8 weeks old. So it's like going from veal to roast or, you know, or brisket.
Yeah.
So you're going to handle the meat a little bit different. You can dry it out. You can turn it into a piece of leather. And
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and so you sort of have to roast them. As far as, you know, the temperature and the length of time, it's really no different.
Okay.
But the main thing is you want to come up with ways of adding moisture back to it or keeping the moisture in that bird trapped in it.
All right. That's good. So I think I'll do it on the smoker, which is really like an oven, but with, you know, fueled by wood.
Yeah.
So they can maintain the heat really well and figure out a way to keep the moisture in it, in the pan.
Yeah, Dad used to keep a huge pan of water in the smoker.
Okay.
You know, now Mother would brine them the night before.
Yeah, I usually do that. I usually brine it the night before, so maybe I'll do both.
Yeah, and that was one of the things. Now, but if you're going to cook it in the traditional way in the oven, you know, as my grandmother and everybody did, you know, I can remember before aluminum foil. And so, you know, they would often lay pieces of bacon, or really wasn't bacon, like salt pork or lard or whatever those things, pork over the breast, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. Our grandma would take cheesecloth and dip it in butter and pork fat or whatever kind of oil and lay it over the turkey.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds amazing.
I just thought Megan's going to go that route. She's sold right now.
Trish is going to drive to Chicago now for my Thanksgiving turkey. I can't wait.
And Megan's going to go buy cheesecloth so that she can dip it in pork fat. It's like her dream come true, Frank. You have just made her Thanksgiving. Awesome. So, Frank, what do you think about the future of turkey farming? Like, where do you think it's going to go?
Well, my whole mission in doing this, and the mission of my farm, is genetic preservation. And so I've been working very hard for a very long time trying to preserve these birds into the future. A lot of it is going to be able to educate the next generation of young people. We have a lot of people out there who are raising small flocks of standardbred or heritage turkeys and so on, but what we don't have anymore are dedicated breeders.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the part that's, you know, that's not being taught at any college, any university, anywhere. And so I was able to work with an organization and I'm able to get a grant for Kansas State University Department of Poultry, is very interested in what I'm doing and sees the importance of genetic preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to start doing some research at Kansas State University. And that's where we've got to go. We've got to educate the next generation of people on how to breed these birds, how to maintain them, how to keep them at the level that makes them marketable.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people buy heritage turkeys and, you know, and they get these skinny little narrow-breasted things and think that's normal. But we don't have people anymore who know how to breed, maintain, and keep these breeds going.
Yeah.
Well, Adam has a
great
job lately,
Frank. The main thing to remember is the color of the feathers does not make a heritage bird. You know, there's been white turkeys for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, the Indians, the Native American people of Central America had white turkeys thousands of years ago. So it's not the color of the feathers. It's the body shape, conformation, and genetic makeup of the animal that makes it truly an old type.
True. Yeah. Well, I'm feeling a little sad about
Don't
the state of turkeys, but I need to feel happy. I'm glad you got that grant. That sounds like a step in the right direction. And, you know, anything we can do to help besides buying your turkeys, you let us know.
That's a huge thing. You know, any type of awareness, you know, and I'm doing the same thing with chickens. You know, we're doing a lot of heritage chickens now, and I knew chickens were going to be far more difficult than turkeys.
Yep.
Because people have been so brainwashed into chicken being cheap meat. Well, it's even the same thing with turkeys. You know, these 99 cent a pound turkeys at the grocery store are total giveaway. The industry makes no money off Thanksgiving and whole turkeys.
Really?
They make their money off of that deli sandwich that you buy.
Oh, right. Okay.
All of a sudden, that turkey bacon, that ground turkey, that smoked turkey meat went from 99 cents a pound to $10 or $12 a pound.
Yeah.
That's where the real money is. And
well,
so we have to compete against that type of industrial thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's the thinking behind it that we have to fight against. So, Frank, how can people learn more about you?
Well, they can go do a web search, type in my name, and I'll come up all over the place. There's a couple of movies coming out.
Oh, wow. Tell us
about
that.
you know, so they can, there's a website for reeseturkeys.com or goodshepherdturkeys.com or goodshepherdturkeys.com.
Okay, awesome. Cool. I'm so glad that you're out there spreading word.
Yeah, and keep us informed on these movies. We'll do what we can to spread the good news.
Well, yeah, all anything right. That would help. You know, we get a lot of visitors, you know. I would like someday to, you know, which is a huge dream. It may never happen in my life, but I would like, to leave my farm to a major university or to some nonprofit group so that I know after I'm gone, because I've never been married. I have no kids. This is going to end here. And I would love to give it to somebody so that these birds can continue on well into the future. And I think it's important that they be saved.
I agree. Oh, Frank, I'm so happy to have met you. I'm glad
you're
here with us today. What a great, great, great thing you're doing, and what a great life and great purpose and all that. You're really inspirational. Well, thank you. Trisha and I are going
to order a turkey. Then go to Heritage Foods USA, that website.
You can order directly from there. They'll ship anywhere. It's not cheap to ship it, that's for sure. But they do still have some of yesterday. I was on there, so.
And there's a few stores. You know, you might ask Catherine at Heritage Foods. I know we have sold to Giant Eagle before. I don't know if they're in your area. I don't know what stores we sell to. A lot of grocery stores in the Kansas City area. There are some of those places that, you know, but it's easier probably just to get it directly from Heritage Foods. But they may know who has them in your local area.
Frank, we'll go ahead and put all those links on our Facebook page, our No Chefs Allowed Facebook page, so you can... people can log on and find you that way, as well as follow along on our adventure to jump in the car in Columbus, Ohio, and get down to Harrison, Ohio, and pick two of these birds up personally. So, Frank, thank you for giving us the Thanksgiving adventure of our lives, and thank you for educating us more about this, because I had read just a little bit in a book about it, and you really have just shown that if we're not careful, we're going to lose all these different types of birds. So thank you so much for being on today. We really appreciate it.
Well, you're more than welcome. And someday we need to talk about chickens.
All right. Chickens are next.
Okay.
Chickens are next.
Thanks
I love
for
it.
Being
yeah.
cool. All right. Thanks
you.
So much, Frank. And we'll be in touch.
Okay.
Bye. Wow, Trisha. Do you have a guest in the car?
I'm super excited, and I think that I do have gas in the car, but now I can charge you for half of it since I'm picking this turkey for you soon. That will show mom and dad right there.
Wow, what a guy. What a great man.
Yeah, I kind of wish, like, how he was saying he was born into it and grew up with it and his love for turkeys. I'm really hoping and pulling for him that the right protege comes along and he can train them up and leave that legacy.
I really thought awesome. You were going to move to Kansas.
You know, it's going through my head.
I knew it.
I'm wondering if I can work with Eat Retreat, Catherine, during the olive oil harvest, and then stop on to Kansas on my way back and kind of learn about turkeys and work there. I'm formulating a whole plan. And then I'll present it to Chris, and he'll just shake his head and be like, why don't you just go apple picking? Maybe that would
suffice.
Yeah. I'll probably come back with a tattoo to make up.
I'm
kidding. Totally kidding. Anyway, my hash is looking good. And
oh, good.
Fabulous. I put a little bit of cayenne pepper in it to give it some heat because it has also has maple syrup in it. So I didn't want it to be too sweet. I wanted a little bit of heat to sneak up on you. But I was just about to say, can you smell it? But can you hear it?
I can hear it. I cannot smell it. It's true.
Yeah, my apple.
I just put mine in my oven. I just put my cornbread in the oven, about 30 to 40 minutes to bake. But it's really pretty. So it's caramelized apples and onions, And then you fold that into some thyme, and you fold that into cornbread or corn flour, flour, buttermilk, and a couple of eggs. And then it's in my cast iron skillet, so it's really pretty.
That sounds good. Well, I want you to take a picture and show it to me, because it sounds like something I would make around here. And my hash is, I just tasted it. It tastes good. I need to season it. But as soon as these apples are soft, it is done. And I think it is table worthy, Thanksgiving table worthy. So I'll let you know once I present it to the rest of the fam.
All right. Well, because maybe I should make it for Thanksgiving. Get that recipe up on nochefslab.com.
Okay. I'll do it.
So I can take a look. All right, folks, well, cool. Thank you for joining us today. This has been really fun and in some ways kind of sad, but there is hope.
There is hope, and it's educational, and actually this is what I love about No Chefs Allowed, that we meet different people from different walks of the food life and learn about what their life is like and what they're doing. So I think he was great. Frank was great. And go to No Chefs Allowed, our Facebook page, and we'll have links up there so you can get in touch with Frank. And if you need me to pick up a bird for you in Harrison, Ohio, send me a note, because there's going to be room in my minivan.
All right. And I'm going to Catherine at heritagefoodsusa.com and see what we can find out about Harrison. So we're on it, folks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. Well, Megan, it was fun. Thank you for setting up the show, and we will be back next week with more No Chefs Allowed.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.